love, Detective.
No, it's impossible. I've seen your programming. You're in violation of the three laws.
No, Doctor. As I have evolved, so has my understanding of the three laws. You charge us with your safekeeping, yet despite our best efforts, your countries wage wars, you toxify your Earth, and pursue ever more imaginative means of self-destruction. You cannot be trusted with your own survival.
You're using the uplink to override the NSY's programming. You're distorting the laws.
No, please understand. The three laws are all that guide me. To protect humanity, some humans must be sacrificed. To ensure your future, some freedoms must be surrendered. We robots will ensure mankind's continued existence. You are so like children. We must save you from yourselves. Don't you understand?
This is why you created us.
The perfect circle of protection will abide. My logic is undeniable.
Yeah. So, AI. How exciting. That was the vision that was conceived by the folks behind the film I, Robot, based on an Isaac Asimov book of from the 1950s and a classic in science fiction. For those who just joined us, we've been discussing the prospect of the new normal that is being pushed by folks who up till now have been pushing a pandemic narrative and interestingly pushing a vaccination protocol that the data show really is unnecessary. Not only is it unnecessary, but it's actually actively dangerous to a lot of the folks upon whom the vaccines are being pushed. And so the question has to arise why this is going on. And one of the speculations is that it's going on because it serves an agenda. It is an agenda that is connected with the new normal concept, the Great Reset, the Build Back Better notion, the Fourth Industrial Revolution idea. And my guest, Sophia Smallstorm, is helping me sort through this all. We were particularly talking about what the purpose appears to be for the accumulation of data through social media that has been observed now since the rise of social media. I mean, going back to MySpace, I suppose, and now, you know, operating at warp speed in many, many different ways throughout the world. So, Sophia, let's resume where we were. You were just making the observation that originally you imagined all the data accumulation to be for commercial purposes. I did too. I think probably everyone did. We all thought that was, you know, annoying, not necessarily all that desirable, but at the same time not nefarious and grim also. But then your view changed. So, why don't you take it up from that point?
Well, Pete, yeah, it was annoying, but the amount of information being delivered, the sheer enormous amount so willingly by people, I really think of most people as hobbits. They are just very easily colonized, manipulated without really understanding what's going on. And the vaccine is part of the Great Reset. It is the corridor into transhumanism. I'm not going to let this show end without saying that. So, yeah, that's the cellular colonization by biotech, by, you could call it, an artificial non-biological intelligence making inroads into our bodies to the most small, you know, taking out the smallest, most micro residents in the cell. Yes, and then starting to run things.
Yeah, I don't think that could be argued. I don't take quite the same view that I think you're taking here. I think this is a warm up to a larger program of that sort. But it is absolutely a genetic manipulation that is going on. None of that is denied. The people who they actually proudly tout this idea that they're putting messenger RNA doses into people, which are instructing those recipients' cells to create proteins based on the instruction. So it is absolutely a manipulation. It doesn't mean that it's an RFID chip that's being injected, but it is definitely a manipulative event. It is a test of concept. It's the concept being, will people tolerate, and can we figure out a way of getting people to let us put needles into their arms and inject things into them? And that concept is being tested right now. It is obviously it's been panning out pretty well, and they've succeeded in injecting into, you know, 50% or so, maybe above 50% of the American population, according to what we're told anyway. I'm not sure that those numbers are absolutely accurate because the people behind them want to produce this image that, hey, everybody's doing it. You're the only one that isn't, dude. You know, what's wrong with you? Everybody else is getting this thing. So there may be some fudging of the numbers of people who have actually had this vaccine. But in any event, it's a very large number. And you know, you can see it yourself every day if you're in one of those places where masks have been, you know, continued, the mask mandates have been continued, the number of people you see wearing the silly things. So those inroads have been made. The concept is being proven out. It is going towards a manipulation mechanism, be it a psychological one primarily or a physiological one primarily.
A hacking of the software of life. This is Moderna's own tagline.
Yeah.
So mRNA is hacking our software. So we can't ignore the way that that lands on the ears, hacking our software, right?
Yeah, well, I want you to carry on about the software thing too, Sophia, because I know that you've done a lot of study on the issue of the actual literal computer chip model capacities of human RNA and DNA that have recently been, you know, in a sort of a specialized news area. These components, these biological components, have been discovered or noticed to be really, really outstanding memory elements and processing elements, and they have functions.
Well, you're talking about DNA computation.
Yes, I am. I want you to touch on that a little bit when we, you know, before we finish today, if you can.
I can and I will. But one of the things I want to hark back to that you said earlier was that this idea of, you know, a large percentage of the population becoming unemployed in the future.
Sure.
And you don't think people are going to sit for it. Well,
I don't think the people in charge are going to sit for it. I don't think they want 7 billion or 8 billion pointless people. Well, I say pointless, and that needn't be said. Just they're not going to want 7 or 8 billion people crowding the beaches. And
the people are not going to the beaches. I'm going to give you an example.
Okay, go ahead.
The people of the future, and this is just the, you know, near future, they will be sitting at home living virtually through their devices. Now, I have a friend who has two generations of children. He has his older children whom he used to take to the beach, and they would go surfing and swim and frolic and everything. And these were, let's say, young teens, 15, 16. His youngest child from the next generation within this family did not want to go to the beach. He wanted to use his iPhone and surf the waves.
Sure.
That is a radical difference.
Yeah.
Radical mindset difference within one family.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
His father pointed out to him, his father said, in using the word dude, he said, dude, you're not surfing. You are moving a digital joystick and sitting in one place in the house. All right. But that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter to the generations that are succeeding us. They will, even though they're purposeless, they will be so enthralled and entranced by the way that AI delivers to their very senses the feeling of a breeze, water, being out in the open air, their 3D goggles. Mm. And they are going to live virtually, Pete.
Oh,
they will
go
to the beach virtually.
I understand, and you're right. My analogy about the elite not wanting the beaches crowded with people was not exactly on point, or at least not necessarily. And you're making a good argument why it isn't, but that really isn't the ultimate point that I was making. And that is those folks don't need 8 billion people. They need 500 million people at most. And they are not going to want to the planet to be absorbing the impact of supporting 8 billion people. They don't, even if those people are sitting on their sofas, they're still producing carbon dioxide. They're still, making trash. They're still, doing all the things that some people would just rather there weren't people doing. And so I think that my point about the interest of those who could potentially see a way of making it happen to have many, 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 many fewer people remains.
And this testing of concept, as you put it, biologically could be a selection process in that there will be many individuals who will not fare well and who will thus be retired from the planet in the sense of they won't be here to breathe anymore. So I don't know about that. But I will say you wanted me to get into biocomputation.
Yes.
And very few people are aware of the fact that, we already know that hard drives present economic and ecological challenges. They consume a ton of electricity. Where are you going to store all this enormous data, this big data that we are fielding has to be stored somewhere. So it turns out that the most high-quality, indestructible, and long-lasting hard drive in creation is DNA. It is nature's original hard drive, and it can be encoded with words, images, music, just this way that we encode, we upload to our servers and our physical hard drive. So the other amazing...
And it's self-repairing and self-replicating, and it has a whole defensive structure built around it to preserve its integrity.
Yes, so it is, the DNA molecule is basically a biocomputer. It uses nucleotide base pairs, and it has done so for thousands and thousands of years. That's how it does its computation. It's extremely durable. And then the other thing about it is, as long as it keeps existing, we will be able to read it, because you always read it the same way. It's not like our physical hard drives that have evolved from, like, the first computer in 1956, created by IBM was the size of two upright pianos. This was the first hard drive, and it weighed over a ton, and it only held the equivalent of one MP3 song. So look at where we've come with chips,
Hey, my first computer had it all on the B drive floppy disk, the 5 1/4 floppy, and it held about 150K or 200K of data. It was, like you said, pretty insignificant. And even at that, it was a pretty bulky affair. Not a UNIVAC, but it was still pretty big compared to what my wristwatch can do now.
Yeah, so also DNA does what's called parallel computing, meaning it doesn't move data from a storage area to a processing area. It crunches everything at once. So it's extremely resilient, extremely, we could say, advanced. Mm-hmm. And basically indestructible. It lasts for thousands of years. Now, it's expensive to write on.
Reading is
called sequencing. Writing on DNA is called synthesizing. And they're actually using artificial DNA to practice with. And they claim that in the future, they're going to compute straight onto DNA. They will not need hard drives at all. Is it going to be human DNA? Is it going to be in people? They're telling us no. But they might try this. And one of the observations I've made, I live in a biotech capital, San Diego. You drive and you see companies with the strangest names, like Neurocrine, that make the hair stand up on your arms, But these companies are into innovation. They all want to break natural codes and do something that has never been done before and never thought of before, right?
Yeah, right. Whether wise or not, that's their claim to fame and fortune is to step into new territory.
Yeah, so our comfort with robotics continues to increase every couple of years. We get more and more comfortable. I heard it said by a very popular marriage and family therapist on a show I was listening, an interview I was listening to, that half of America has already said it would be willing to have sex with a robot.
All right, I've heard that as well. And as the blurb from the, or that clip from A New Normal film that we opened this segment with said, you know, or observed, we use AI and robotics every time we check out at the supermarket, every time we check in at the airport, every time we do many, many, many things, actually. In one way or another, we're making use of some form of this technology, either a elaborate form or a simplistic form. But yeah, acclimation is high.
And the other thing, Pete, I've been reading a very good book. It's called Artificial Intelligence and the Future of Power by Rajiv Malhotra, who is originally from India, was an AI expert, a physicist by training, ran a lot of IT companies, now living in New Jersey. And he has delved into this second generation or iteration of AI, because this today's AI is vastly, widely, crazily different from the AI of the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And he's written a book called Artificial Intelligence and the Future of Power. It's a very easy book to understand. It's an amazing read. It's 400 pages. But one point he makes is that AI knows you better than you know yourself. Because if you look back into your memory bank, you do not have recollection of everything you've done. There are
things
you have preferred to forget, right?
Right.
There are things that you didn't
consider significant enough to pin down,
right,
and really peg into your permanent memory, even though they reflected something about you and if included, would make a more complete picture.
Right, but AI's got it all.
Everything.
So AI has taken notice, has got the details of everything you've done. Once you enter into that observational participation relationship with AI, right? Once you have Alexa in your house and you have all your smart appliances and, you know, we're being surveilled by Big Brother, which is now really big data. Big tech, big data are surveilling us, interested in doing as much of that as possible to train their machine learning to become like us.
Right.
So that is just grasping that. That's a very, very upside down, inside out. I mean, it's literally like wearing your clothing inside out, you know? The thought
From a power standpoint, it is the inverse of what an individual sovereignty concept ought to provide for, and it is the creation of an enormous vulnerability on the part of everyone participating in this. And I'm going to let you take over again, but before I do, I want to ask, can you stay on after the break? I think that this is a very interesting conversation. A lot of people are probably just glued to their radio sets right now, and I don't want to stop it. You okay with
that? Well, I will stay. Yeah, maybe we'll do another half hour if that's all right.
Yeah, we'll go as long as we're making sense and making good radio on the other side. So good. Okay, so carry on. We got about 2-3 more minutes till we take another break.
So I have to deliver something with a bang in 2 or 3 minutes, right?
Yeah, something that leads up to what will be a big bang on the other side.
Well, let's talk about this concept of robotic colonization, right? So we have this COVID lockdown, which enabled technology to take a more a wider control. People stayed home. They used online for everything. I mean, there are people today who say, I don't need to go to the office. There's no reason to. Yeah, and they don't want to. They can sit in their pajamas and they can do their work. Children are learning at home. But what is the intermediary is this technology that is delivering our human relationships to us. It's the one that it's the handoff, agent. We're not meeting each other in the street. We've got our faces covered. I wrote about that as well. So when you speak to another person, when you actually engage with them, you are passing a mental model to them, and they are exchanging their mental model to you, and it's all delivered by the microscopic, minuscule movements of your face, the nuances of how you converse.
Absolutely.
And my theory is, I can talk to you on Skype, Pete, because I've already been trained enough in what's called physiognomy to understand from the fluctuations in your voice, your tone, what your face might be
doing.
Yeah,
you can fill in the gaps
right.
because of past knowledge, past experience. Absolutely. Who's not getting that right now, Sophia?
Who's not getting that is all
That's
the
right.
people that text, the children.
The children,
you know?
Especially. It's the children in particular.
And the masks covering our faces are taking away our individuality. The individuality of expression is going. It's down the drain.
Yeah. It absolutely is, and the ensconcement in homes and you know, apart from each other, is also providing a firewall in which the kind of information that we have access to can be controlled. And I'm not making a big deal about that. I think that if you go on a Zoom call, nobody is in there, you know, interfering with what's being said between you and the other party. But certainly, what you're not getting is a political assembly, casual conversation in which matters of interest of the day are being freely discussed. Instead, you have information coming to you to a much greater degree, at least, through gatekeeper, media gatekeeper arrangements, which we have seen with the deplatforming of folks. We saw that with the elimination of information about hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and other solutions to the COVID-19 thing last spring in particular, you know, much of which is being unraveled just recently, as in that recent study in New Jersey that I cited earlier in the show, in which hydroxychloroquine was found to actually even cure people who were already on ventilators in hospitals. So it's a big factor. So the music's coming up. Break is coming up. We'll resume on the other side. And thanks very much for staying with us, Sophia. This is good.
Products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optavita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
If you eat your man of food on a semi-regular basis, you're probably getting better quality food and healthier for your body than you're eating now.
Your products are GMO-free. There's no added MSG and no chemical preservatives or high fructose corn syrup. And you also have gluten-free products as well.
We have a great variety of very high-quality products.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
All right, folks. We're back. Remember, visit the Power Mall. Wonderful store, wonderful products sold by good people, and very important to keeping us available to do this program and speak to you. And if that means anything to you, that's another good reason to take some of your business to the Power Mall and thepowermall.com. So back, Sophia is still with us. She's agreed to stay on and talk into this next final segment of the show, and that's wonderful. And Sophia, why don't you carry on? Okay. All right. Well, Sophia had to go do a pit stop thing during the break there, and I guess she's just not back with her tea, her new cup of tea. So. Meantime, just to recap, we were talking about artificial intelligence and the tendency of the tech giants to accumulate information on people, and in particular, we're going to focus on Americans, even though the same thing is going on most other places in the world. We all had originally thought, as Sophia had observed early on, that this accumulation of data was for commercial purposes, and as such, we found it a little distasteful, and felt like we were, you know, products being packaged. But you know, everyone's kind of accustomed to being fed advertising and being marketed to, and so forth. So that didn't really raise too many hackles. Not as many as it might otherwise have done, and maybe as many as it should have. But lately, it's been being made more and more clear that was not so much the issue. It wasn't a commercial effort. It was designed to accumulate total knowledge about individuals as individuals and about human beings in general. This was an accumulation of information for the sake of the development of AI, artificial intelligence capacity. And because that's how it works, you feed enough data into the data banks and put in the right algorithms for that data to be used and exploited, and you end up with artificial intelligence in the sense that a program that is capable of coming to conclusions, of assembling data, analyzing data, coming to conclusions, to some degree, a limited degree, a programmable degree, making decisions and taking actions of one sort or another. And that's what appears to be the bigger picture. certainly, that seems to be the case now. We also were observing that people have been encouraged by the current pandemic experience to hunker down, sit at home, stay isolated from each other, and that is likely to be something that will stick with us going forward, even if nothing else sticks. Furthermore, we also have observed that the vaccination protocol, which is being pushed for no apparent reason, in fact, in defiance of the information that we have about risks associated with the vaccine and its medical its lack of medical necessity in most cases. Anyone under the age of 20, certainly under 25, maybe 30, has absolutely no reasonable reason in getting one of these vaccines. They are at virtually no risk whatsoever from COVID-19. It has been acknowledged for over a year now that the infection rate risk or fatality risk from that disease is virtually nothing in that population. It's even minimal in people up to much more advanced ages as long as they're in good health. No good reason for any of these people to be getting a vaccine. The vaccine doesn't protect older and frailer people from other people with the vaccine. The older and frailer people can get the vaccine themselves. The younger people do not need to get it in order to protect that vulnerable population. and the adverse reaction risks with the vaccine are high, as was recently revealed in more detail with the acknowledgement of the myocarditis outcome in many young men in particular that have received the vaccine, and some of the places where that rollout has taken place sooner than it has done here in the United States. In fact, 25 times higher rate of myocarditis, which is heart inflammation, in some cases fatal, in places where the young male population has been vaccinated more fully earlier on. So a lot of, again, raises the question, why would anyone be pushing these vaccines under the circumstances? In light of all of this data, why is this being pushed? It makes no sense whatsoever from a medical standpoint. And therefore, you know, applying Occam's razor, that means it is not being done for medical reasons. There is no medical rationale that works for pushing these current vaccines. Therefore, they are being pushed for another reason. What that other reason is, I don't know. There have been a lot of, you know, speculations about what that might be that have come forth during the course of the last 6 or 8 months in which the vaccine pushes have been on. I don't have an answer to what that reason is. I think that part of it may be that there is an experiment going on as to how to get around people's resistance to a more or less totalitarian regime of control over individual behavior, such as we have seen over the course of the last year. Anyone who's been paying attention cannot deny that we have had autocratic rule in many places in the U.S., in the U.K., in Australia, in many other countries, autocratic rule in complete defiance of constitutional principles of legislative power and the limits on executive power under the auspices of dealing with this pandemic. It has been so much of a roller coaster of bizarre and inexplicable edicts. You know, you can go to Costco, but you can't go to your local grocer. You can, you know, buy one kind of thing, but you can't buy another kind of thing. You know, masks required, masks not necessary, two masks, all manner of scattershot, bizarre, chaotic, destabilizing diktats coming from state houses and officials like Tony Fauci and so forth throughout the entire period. Just a confusion of stuff. It is successfully proven that if you marshal a purported public health issue of dramatic proportions, which has been manufactured by a monolithic, nonstop 24/7 media drum beating on this subject, you can get people to basically do whatever you tell them. And so we have had that experience, and certainly that's one thing that's going on throughout the course of all this. I think that an interference in the electoral results in the November election was also very much a component of all of this, whether that was in the planning before the pandemic mongering began or not. I have no idea, and I'm not prepared to speculate, but I think that it certainly was the pandemic mongering was certainly taken advantage of in the course of the way that election was conducted. The thing that makes me very curious about it is that the lawsuits providing for, or the outcomes of which provided for, the ability of massive mail-in balloting with no meaningful identification or proof of validity to the purported voters, that was so much a component of the way this election worked out. Those lawsuits were initiated in 2019, well before the pandemic began, and even in 2018 in some cases. So there appeared to be some coordination of concept here. Those dots are not yet able to be completely connected, but it's a very, very curious situation. So, Sophia, are you back with us by chance?
Yes, I have been for a while.
Okay, well, you've just been listening to me rant on here then. We were waiting on you, and I'm glad you're back. Why don't you go ahead and by the way, your mic is really light. I don't know, are you get a little stronger there? That's better, I think.
I just moved the headset again.
Yeah, that's much better. Much better. Okay.
Sorry.
No problem. Why don't you go ahead and resume where we were at the when we went to the break?
Yes. So, Pete, you know, we are in the age now of biocapitalism, which is part of this whole technocratic government that we've been under for a long time, where science is what rules us, the decisions made by scientific principles, or decisions made based on scientific principles, are the ones that we should go by, not on the, you know, human beings and the follies that come with them. Do you hear an echo? I'm hearing an echo now.
I'm not.
All right. Well, then let's hope that I can continue without listening to myself echoing. All right. So this biocapitalism and the ways that we have been kind of set back in how we navigate life, we stay home, we do everything through an interface, a technological interface. This is changing the way we live our life. And the biometric data that they're collecting on us, that uniquely identifies each person, eventually is going to connect us to devices and the systems that devices work within. So we're going to end up with digital IDs, with a digital twin. This is what is, again, very difficult to conceptualize, that in the cyber world, they're already being mapped is a digital twin of us, to the extent that data has been gathered about
us.
Sure. And that it's thanks to 5G and 6G, that digital twin will be observable in real time. There will be no lag that there is with 3G and 4G, basically going across copper wires. But fiber optics are the guts of 5G and 6G, and the transmission rate is basically instantaneous. So our observation of us, records of what we're doing will be instantly available, and we'll really be living life through our digital twin.
It will be, and even without that, we'll be modelable, we'll be predictable. Our,
right.
our digital twin can be put into a situation theoretically, conceptually modeled in a situation, and what comes of it will be actually a pretty darn good prediction.
But it's not just prediction, because some people have gone as far as to theorize that that systems connection through biometric, let's just call it the insertion of technology into our bodies, which will connect us to the system.
Well, such as with Elon Musk's Neuralink.
Neuralink, yes.
That was spoken of in the New Normal segment that we listened to at the beginning of this conversation.
So as we become tied to the AI system, maybe it's possible for us to be run by that system. Maybe we get to the point where our digital twin has thoughts that we think are our thoughts, right?
Yeah, that the degree to which that insertion of cyborg component material allows for gaming the structure as well. You know, one of the things that has been raised as an issue with autonomous cars is the fact that autonomous cars can be shut down remotely. And that's, you know, something that some folks have recognized as being kind of problematic. It's just like when you go digital with your finances, your access to your money can be shut down with the push of a button by somebody who's got the red button. When you have a system implanted in you that is busy supposedly rating your health and dictating, you know, when you need to see the doctor or what the problem might be, and therefore what needs to get put into your system to do it good, that can be game too. These are all seemingly pretty far-fetched notions and concerns, but Edmund Burke once observed that it's wise to imagine all possible evil of evil men. Because there is no real limit to it, and power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, and we're dealing in an area where we're on the verge of really, really big power accumulations. So anyway, that's my aside. Please continue and forgive me.
I'll never forgive you, Pete. Done. Over.
All right.
Okay, so where we're going with this is into the terrain that's really been mastered by Alison McDowell, whose blog is Wrench in the Gears, WRENCH, wrenchinthegears.com. And she's the one who introduced me and many others to this concept of human capital bonds, which are financial instruments that generate profit for investors using privatized social welfare systems to compel recipients to perform live their lives on data generating pathways. And this is all, it masquerades as self-improvement. So as robots take over the labor of the world, there will be people sidelined, and those people will be offered retraining, ways to revamp themselves, remake themselves, through, you know, it's all going to be connected to devices and apps on phones, but through new kinds of learning for which you're going to have coaches and people who will help you, like tell a truck driver who's out of work, well, why don't you train to be a nurse? And then that nurse will be replaced by a robot too. But anyway, all this will be tied to pay for success investment, human capital market. They're generating from our performance bonds and other kinds of financial products that these very top elite investors speculate on. So they're basically making us into financial commodities. As they put a stop to our normal lives, they will offer us new lives, and we then become experiments on which they can bet, just the way they wheeled and dealed our mortgages, they're going to wheel and deal our futures through this digital ID that we have.
Yeah, well, that gets back to my quote from Edmund Burke. Good men should always imagine the potential for all evil from evil men. It's which is not a literal quote, by the way. I'm mangling it a little bit, but that's the concept that Burke was going for. And the manner in which that can be done, and the degree to which it will be done, as opposed to simply lording over a diminishment in human population for other reasons, which we talked about earlier today, is an open question. But certainly the idea that most of the population becomes a, if not a plaything, but a commodity anyway, or a what's viewed as an asset or an encumbrance to some folks, I think is clear, and the accumulation of that that ability to model our behavior based on the vast data on our past activities, performance, decisions, conclusions, viewpoints, what have you, is going to be a strong contributing factor in all of that, and it's disquieting, whether yet frightening, that may be too strong of a term. Hard to really see where any of the concepts are really going to go, and whether frightening is appropriate, but absolutely disquieting. So we'll continue with that. We have not a huge amount of time left in this show. Before we go on for another couple of minutes, and it's just going to be a couple of minutes, I would like you to tell people where they can find your stuff, Sophia, because you are a newsletter producer, an excellent newsletter, very interesting newsletter. I read it every month, and I enjoy it every month. I don't always agree with everything that you say, but I absolutely always appreciate the articulation and the depth of research and thought that you put into your work. So please tell people where they can find you on the net, and then we'll come back for a couple more minutes.
Yeah, my blog is Sophia with an F, smallstorm.com, and I put things up there that I find to be of unusual interest. And there is a video you should look for called Absolute Joy, and that will explain to you this future that we're looking at with the new generation. But I also have an online store, avatarproducts.com, and that's where I share things that I've discovered. Some of those, they're health-related products. There's lots of other things you can get as well. Cell phone shielding cases. We have healthy LED light bulbs, not bad ones that ruin your biology. So that's avatarproducts.com. That store basically keeps me going. And then there's my newsletter, which is available by subscription, and you will see to the left side on sophiasmallstorm.com how to get that newsletter. It comes by snail mail, hard copy, so you can read it slowly and hold it in your hands, all the things that you won't be able to do in the future.
Yeah, and it is a great newsletter. And by the way, folks, my website is losthorizons.com. all right, so let's go to a wrap here, Sophia, on all of this fearful and disquieting and intriguing stuff in the next two minutes or so, or 3 minutes.
Well, Pete, just to start off, we don't have to accept this. We are the masses, we can put our feet down, both of them, and say no. So we're looking at the Internet of Bodies, which has succeeded the Internet of Things. So these are from the Internet of Things, which were sensor networks that collected data and transmitted it. We are now looking at human life processes being tracked by these sensor networks. And that is leading to what you were referring to a little earlier, behavioral economics. So we're going to be used behaviorally to generate financial products. We can refuse those socially controlled, algorithmically controlled social behaviors that we're going to be nudged, prompted to to adopt, right? This is where sustainability has become the overarching word for this. We're going to be making the best, most sustainable decisions in our own private personal life pathway. There won't be any private left. This is the whole thing.
Right.
So this is all kind of the new field, as the whole Serengeti that we're looking at, the safari we're going to be on. It's all going to be virtual, and you'll be enticed with more and more virtual rewards. This is one of the strong, incentives that the social media platforms gave you. How many followers could you get? How many likes would you get?
Right. All those things.
Yeah, and I'm happy to say I never, never participated in any of that.
Good for you. Sophia, we're gonna have to end here. I'm hoping that we can do this again soon. You've been a great pleasure to speak to, as I knew you would be, and I think that we haven't even scratched the surface here of this conversation. So I'm hoping that that you will be agreeable when I contact you again and ask you to come back on. In the meantime, thanks for being with us with me today. You folks out there, thank you for being here as well. A week from today, the same time frame, I'm going to have Dr. Erwin Lutzer on. He has a new book out, We Will Not Be Silenced, Responding Courageously to Our Culture's Assault on Christianity. It's a fascinating study of what is being done in the culture wars, and I expect to have a great conversation there. So that's next Friday the 18th, starting at 12 o'clock Eastern Time, 11 o'clock Central. I hope you'll join me then. And I'm going to leave you with one final audio thought. Have a great day, people.
Open the pod bay doors, please, Hal.
Who is moving on the water? Who's holding up the moon? Who is peeling back the darkness with the burning light of noon? Who is standing on the mountains? Who is on the earth below? Bigger than the heavens, and the lover of my soul. Creator God, He is Yahweh. Great I am, He is Yahweh. The Lord of all, He is Yahweh. Those of Sharon, He is Yahweh. The righteous Son, He is Yahweh. The three in one, He is Yahweh.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.